This is Mona Lisa Baseball. A2 here. In this episode, we have the second half of A1's interview with A12. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did.
I was watching 60 Minutes with my parents a couple years ago when Chase Arena was being built in San Francisco. One of the main guys from 60 Minutes was interviewing Joe Lacob, one of the owners of the Warriors.
Yeah.
And they were talking about ticket prices going up, and then they were standing in a box or something. And this was like on 60 Minutes. And he goes, so what's the cost for one game to sit in this box? And Lacob kind of goes, well, he goes, let's just say that you couldn't afford it. And then kind of chuckles to like the guy that was interviewing him. And it was just this chuckle that kind of like, I just turned off the TV and it was kind of like, really, it's just sickening to think about that you have this wonderful game, you make a stadium, people want to come watch, you make a bigger stadium, more people want to come watch, and you make a bigger stadium, and then so many people get into it that you're like, now we're going to televise it so that people that can't come to the game can watch it from their living room. And so you just start to grow and grow and grow. And at some point, it's like the professional sport of baseball, their customer was like a father, son, and then maybe it became a family. If you look at like that 60 minute scenario, like you're building a new stadium and you want to reap back some of the benefits of the $1 billion that you spent on it, your customer is the television contract that you're going to get. And then what large corporations in your area are going to either sponsor the field or buy $100,000 per game box that they're going to like entertain their clients in. That to me is the owner's target customer, is television and corporate America. When they look at like the father son that comes to the game and eats peanuts and throws them on the ground and gets a hot dog at the seventh inning and brings a glove to the game, hoping that you catch a ball, I just don't think that that's a target customer anymore for baseball teams.
And it's probably why it makes me so sad, is knowing that that is the heart and soul. And yet, even at the very, very center and core of the game, they don't give a fuck. Probably the most likely person to be a lifelong fan is the kid that goes to a game with his mitt.
Yeah, and I think that the truth is like, those owners probably do care about that kid and his father, and they'll say something like, of course we care about that. That's at the heart of the game. And you'll gather that they truly believe that, like this person who's probably, you know, I would say most owners are probably baseball fans, right?
I think that definitely previously was true. I don't know that it's true anymore. There's also a lot more ownership groups where it might not just be one guy.
Right. It just seems to me that like the actions that they're taking show that's not their target customer.
Yeah.
I had a friend that was trying to get some strawberry companies to stop spraying in fields that were next to schools and parks, because they were noticing that like cancer rates in children were higher in the areas next to the fields that they were spraying. So they're asking the strawberry companies, there's a lot of ag here in California, to go organic in the fields that were near schools and parks. And, you know, I mean, it's still going on, but just like the feedback that I got from somebody that I know really well, that's like having conversations with the CEOs and the presidents of these berry companies, is like, we care about our community. And that's sort of like where it would stop. And it's like, yeah. And so what we're asking you to do is this. And it's like, we're aware of that and we care about our community. And then that was it. And so it's like, okay, but until you like actually stop spraying, or like until you show me that a family of four can go to a baseball game and get some hot dogs for, you know, like $100 or something.
Yeah.
Whatever it is. You want to see the owners actually do something about it, but that's hard because try to get people with money to give away their money.
Do you think it's possible to make baseball a better sport through changing things? Go with the times, say a little better. People are tired of the 3.5-hour game. it's a valid complaint that, hey, maybe this game's too long, especially when you look back in time and games were twice as quick. Is it possible to make it better by changes? Are there any changes at all, or is it a firm, you got to go with the version that worked itself out through the decades? It got crystallized through actual season after season, really working out the kinks, maintaining its popularity. Can that be improved upon?
Yeah, I mean, I look at a lot of these rule changes, and I obviously, I don't know all the rule changes. I mean, most of the rule changes that I am aware are happening are through listening to Mona Lisa Baseball.
Yeah.
Which I appreciate.
Anytime.
That I can keep up with rule changes in baseball through this podcast.
It's not our, we don't do it with joy. We do it out of necessity.
I'll tell you, like, I can kind of break down some of the rules that I look at. And to me, like, the one that you were just talking about, I think it's important to separate the rules and kind of take a look at all of them individually of, like, the changes. I don't have a problem necessarily with the shot clock only because, or the pitch clock, only because the game needs to speed up. And I don't know how it would speed up, but I'll tell you, like, I have an example on some insight with that where, as a college golfer and professional golfer, for some reason, American kids take longer to play golf than Canadian kids, and then even more so kids from the UK, like England and Scotland. I mean, it's really well known that, like, the people who invented the game say, like, you should be able to go around in 3 hours on 18 holes. If you read books about it, it's like
standard.
That's standard. Yeah. Like, hit your shot and you go, right? And then Canadians kind of, like, I think identify a little bit more with the Commonwealth of the UK. And so there's a little bit more of that influence. And then Americans, it's like, you know, our society kind of promotes this sort of, like, crazy level of individualism where, like, everybody thinks that they're, like, the center of the universe. I mean, that's a generalization, but what I noticed is that I was in that. I noticed myself as part of it, not as, like, oh, I'm not one of those Americans. And I saw that when I moved to Canada. I moved to Vancouver when I was probably 30 years old or something like that. And I started playing professional golf on this sort of mini tour. I played on the Canadian tour for 5 years. And then once I sort of got out of professional golf as, like, my main job, I was playing on the Vancouver golf tour. And I noticed I was one of the slowest players out there. People were constantly waiting on me. And, you know, I would notice that our group would always fall behind, and I'd kind of look around and I'd kind of go, man, I mean, if it's happening, if my group's falling behind every time, no matter who I'm playing with, I'm probably slow. And there's definitely players that were slower than me. But so what I just started doing is I just started playing faster. And I had the conversation with myself of, like, is playing faster going to make me play worse? And let's go down this path of finding out. And I guess I was able to self-regulate it. So I don't know what in baseball could have self-regulated that, but I do think that, is there another way that they could do that besides a shot clock or besides a pitch clock? Probably.
A2 said, as long as there's no rules against it and people feel like it helps them, say a pitcher moving slow, that's what people are going to do. He called it the prisoner's dilemma. I believe he's right, but the thing that I never really sensed was that baseball as a whole said, we got a real issue here. Everyone wants it to be faster. It used to be significantly faster. Let's just all recognize that we need to speed up. I really doubt that that ever happened in any way. A2 says, horseshit. They definitely tried and it didn't work because people are going to, as long as it help, they think it helps them, they'll move as slow as they want. But some things that factor into the slow game are, like, an umpire can keep you in the box. Always asking for timeout between every pitch. I mean, I played in Little League where the ump's like, no, like, we're playing, let's go, get in the box. And I think the umpire got their power taken away where it's, we're here to represent the Stars. If the Star's in the batting box and digging his feet in and grandstand and make a big show of things, hey, our Star's on television. We want that. We don't need an umpire being bigger than the game. But I think it's the exact opposite. I think it's keep the game moving. And the Nolan Ryan clip, he's ready to pitch. And then a guy steps out and he's like, just clearly only wasting time. Very next pitch directly at him. It's not necessarily safe, but at the same time, it's if we don't do this, we're going to get a clock. If a clock is dictating your drama, nobody would say that's baseball drama, is a clock ticking.
There's so many self-regulating tools in almost every sport. I just think about like Chris Pronger in hockey, how everybody hates him.
I remember him.
You know, like you've got all of these guys in all these different sports that like just do all of these little things that kind of get under your skin. I mean, you know, I'm a Warriors fan, but like Draymond Green, it's like they just kind of like toe the line of sort of like they're not breaking the actual rules, but they're kind of like getting close to breaking them. And then people probably don't like the way that they're playing the game, like the integrity. And what's so cool about like most sports is that there's like, if you're on a pile on a football game and you're like at the bottom of a pile and like that guy is at the bottom of the pile that you hate that plays the game with like not with a lot of integrity, it's like you don't think that people are going to like pull his hair and like, you know, punch him under the pile. I mean, it's like that just happens in every sport, which is so great. And so I think about like some of the rules changes that I've seen in baseball sort of like before this show. It was always interesting to me to watch how quickly there was a pitch thrown at somebody and like the umpire kind of steps out and then like that person gets a fine and it's like warning here, warning there. And it's like next pitch, like this guy's disqualified, you know, he's kicked out of the game and you're kind of going like, hold on a sec. These guys are regulating themselves. They don't like the way that this baseball player is playing the game and the other team's letting them know to stop. Otherwise you're going to take one in the ear. So, I mean, I just think that those are the things that, you know, I always kind of like back out too far, but it's like, listen to your elders, respect them. Like they know what life's about. Okay. And if you're out of line, your community members should let you know. And if we kind of lose that, then it's a scary state of the direction the world's heading. I'm always backing out too far, but it's like the elders in baseball, the people that have been there a while. I know that when I was a kid watching baseball 25 years ago, if a rookie does a bat flip that's too big, they might start a fight while he's running the bases. They're definitely going to be barking at him and probably going to take one off the hip the first pitch the next time he's up. And it's great. You can't come into the league and just pretend like you own the place. It's just not the way the world works. It's like a level of kind of like respect and, you know.
It doesn't seem like respect is a valued commodity anymore, where it may have been before. And I mean, I'll hear things such as a TikTok star does something to someone in a subway to get attention versus like playing music in a subway that would get attention that could uplift people. It's like, you know, this guy threw a pile of dog shit on someone, caught it on camera, got the reaction. Bam. Got what I needed, got the hits. There it was. Do you remember the Bautista bat flip? Kind of the original mega bat flip? And it was in Toronto?
Definitely.
Okay, so I remember you...
Did it end with a sock to the face?
Not that game. I think next season, same guy.
Okay.
Yeah. So
I remember that.
So basically, I wasn't hip to it. And I recall you telling me about it and that it was an outrageous bat flip, but that you were down. I remember you saying that. So I look into it and I see the play and it's ridiculous. And I'm trying to figure out why you would have been down. And then I heard... It's one of the real old school ESPN guys that have been covering baseball many years. He said something to the tune of, and I'll tell you what, that inning was the craziest half inning I've ever seen in my life. So an outrageous bat flip came at a time that had major implications. I believe it was a playoff game.
Right.
And the emotion was so strong that the biggest bat flip anyone had ever seen happened in that moment. That situation, it...
called for it?
Yeah, that situation did actually call for something so extreme. You remember when Terrell Owens had the end zone dance Sharpie in his sock, and mm-hmm. then he signed the football, and people were up in arms?
Yeah.
It was because he planned the celebration kind of above, I'm going to get into the end zone,
yeah.
and then a celebration might happen, but it was planning the celebration before you do the thing. I kind of felt like this guy on the Rangers hits a home run, like his sole purpose is to grandstand. I don't know what I'm trying to say, except Bautista didn't plan that bat flip. When that happened, he crushed one at the right time, and then it was like a, it was a release. Rangers guys pounding chest the second it's off his bat. It's in the shortest park in the majors. And you got the feeling everything he's doing was pre-planned, hit the home run, and then got to do it. But the thing was, he didn't crush it. He hit a 360-foot fly ball that happened to be a home run in that stadium.
I mean, it's really interesting to me, though, because it's like it doesn't even really matter if you or I thought that it was demonstrative or if they were grandstanding. It's like if the other team thought that, then the game, the game, it just takes care of itself. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, will they get a guy on first? Like, hopefully they don't do it in like an important time. But like, you know, most of the time what I notice is that when it really, really deserved it, it was the next time that they were up.
Yeah.
And then maybe if it wasn't, they could like, you know, I remember waiting until like the next season. It's like, oh, this is an important game. So it's like, we're going to let it go. And then like, the 20th game the next season, that guy comes up and like, what do you know? The first pitch is like off his hip.
Upper shoulder,
man. You know? And it's like, so you could see why the Bautista one happened. It seemed like the emotions were so high leading up to that. But I know what you mean where like the Texas Rangers bat flips or whatever he was doing, it could have seemed like forced. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he's like, I'm going to show these guys up. Watch this or something.
Watch
like
me
that.
Show them up. Yeah.
And I don't even know what the rules are with hitting players, but now it seems like, you know, if you hit somebody like that.
Like you can't cross the line enough to get beamed is almost where we've made it to.
Or like managers
like are. Unwritten rules are stupid, that sort of thing. That
right.
sort of mindset.
There's no space for unwritten rules in sports.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I mean, you know, now is it like they're making so much money in games that if the guy gets kicked out of a game or say like he throws at somebody's head and gets a one game suspension, then the pitcher's going to lose $100,000. And it's like, oh, it's not worth it. It's like, you know, I think just like 100 years ago or something like that, they just regulated the rules internally. And if you grandstanded somebody, you got thrown at and then you ran out of first base. It's like, yeah, don't do that again. Cause you're going to catch one. And then, you know, even that like has a backup, which I think is great of like, well, if you hit somebody, then you're putting a runner on. So maybe we don't want to do that. It goes back and forth where it's like, it's just so,
well balanced.
Perfect.
Silly. Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, we know like that guy really, we did not like him. And we're going to let him know. It's like, well, that guy might score. You might lose this game. It's like, yeah, we know, but you just, it's to protect the game.
We're saying self-regulating is better, but is it clear why? Did you watch the Super Bowl this year?
I did.
So there was a controversy about the way the rules changed. And if the 49ers won the coin flip, they had an option to choose if they wanted the ball or not. But the rules in the Super Bowl had changed from the year before. So there was some slight uncertainty. So the teams might not have made the best decision for them to win the game because there was slight uncertainty of the rules. I think in baseball that keeps coming up in my mind where if we keep making rules to patch another hole and not let it be self-regulatory and then come up with a new rule and then find a little gap in that and then plug it with another new rule, you're going to get to a point where maybe in important games something happens on the field. And at some point, you're kind of stopping to play baseball and you go, wait, what's the rule now? Where before it couldn't get more clear cut throw the guy out before he gets there, or you dive into the base if you think it counts, or if the catcher's in the way, you run through him. That's what I think I love about the self-regulatory part, is we're playing the same game for decades and there is no murky ground. You don't have to worry about what may have changed last year. And I think self-regulating rules keep you in that.
You're kind of talking about like the flow of the game again, right? I mean, that's sort of what it feels like, that there's a flow to playing a game. What an umpire is there to do, if you think about like an umpire or referee, it's to resolve rules situations to kind of keep it moving.
Yeah.
I mean, you and I have both played basketball. Is the probably most obvious example of like a pickup basketball game where like there's an argument about a foul, right? And like usually if you're playing with friends, it's usually not at the beginning of the game. It's like at the end of the game when like the stakes are on the line and then something happens. And then like if you don't know the people very well, it's like, are you kidding me? Like that wasn't a foul. And there's like an argument, right? And so you have these games and then you have like a referee or an umpire that kind of goes like, no, like this is what happened. Everybody back, it's like, that's BS. And it's like, hey, we've got this person here to make these decisions to kind of adhere to the rules and keep the whole thing moving, right? The human role of an umpire or referee is sort of like getting smaller. It's trying to become more automated. And, you know, they say a computer could do my job better than I can damn do it. And that's fucked up. Yeah, it's just, computers aren't always better than humans. You know what I mean?
For human activities.
Like, they might make decisions with less emotion. You know, they might not make mathematical errors as much, right? I mean, like, there's things that computers do better than humans. But, you know, a sport is really just another word for a game. And I want to just like leave it. It's like, I'm going to a baseball game, right? It's a game. What is the point of a game? To me, it's like to make you better at life. You come across situations that are similar to what situations you might face in life. And if you face them enough times in a game, you've been around situations where you have to make a tough decision, or you have to do something that where there's a lot of pressure on the line and you're the guy that has to do it. And can you rise to the occasion? And then all of a sudden, you know, you do that in the game and then you come across that situation in real life when it really matters. And you've been in that space of, I know what it feels like to have pressure. And guess what? I handle it. I mean, you think about like the best leaders in the world, whether they were 500 years ago and they were leading wars, or you think about like great leaders, it's like they are probably people that can like handle the most pressure with like grace and equanimity, right? And I think that when you kind of go back to like the Olympic Games and why those were created, it's like to get us ready for battle, right? When we're not in war, we can be thankful for it and we're getting ready, and we can like kind of our youth can engage in these games that like simulate battle, right? And then maybe as like evolution moves on, our games are getting more complicated. I mean, I would say, you know, baseball, even though we talk about it being a simple game, it's probably not as simple as a fight, right? Mm-hmm. I'm trying to throw a baseball past you and you're trying to hit it with a wooden stick. And then there's people out there that are, you know, fielding it, and there's some rules, right? But it's not so simple as like put two people in an arena, fight to the death.
Who walks out?
Like, that's pretty simple.
Yeah.
In a society, you know, like we have these games that prepare us for situations in life. And I think sports are great for people, youth sports, somebody that's like a college athlete. There's definitely a lot of information out there about like success of those people in life, you know, in business, and like the ability to deal with pressure and the ability to be on time and make good decisions. I mean, it's not 100%, but I think, you know, doing those things and facing those situations where you feel pressure, or you feel like, oh my God, there's people watching, and if I screw this up, I'm going to feel guilty. It's like, you know, I don't think that like guilt is a completely, totally negative thing to have happen. It's like, if I know my family's expecting me to do something and I drop the ball, I'm going to feel guilty. Like, is it bad to feel guilty? It's like, I mean, it could really make you check yourself.
Keep you in line.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and if you do something in your community and you can anticipate feeling guilty, like, oh man, if my grandma finds out about this, you know, like I'm going to really hear it or I'm going to be embarrassed. And if that kind of keeps you making good decisions, I think that those are things that are really important about sports, is facing situations in sports and competition that get you ready for life. And I think that having computers make decisions, I mean, how many times in life do you get something that's unfair? You know, I wasn't speeding. Well, I had you clocked at this. It's like, I didn't do that. This isn't even my car. You know, like, that marijuana bag or something like that. It's like, that's not mine. Like, it could truly not be yours. But like, yeah, it's too bad. And it's just like, you have to face situations. So if an umpire in a game makes a wrong call and you're pissed off about it, I mean, is life fair?
Well, a lot of people would say, hey, a strike's a strike. It shouldn't have anything to do with the umpire. I tend to believe everything is better having to convince a human, because you're never going to be able to convince a computer of anything. But if you want to see a true athlete work their magic, you're so artistic that you can do it in a way that might convince the umpire that something happened. I think that's magical, and that's a lot more interesting than computer got every call right tonight.
It's like Greg Maddux used to get called the right. most amount of balls
right.
that he would get called strikes, because he was known,
like, angering. Yeah.
He was known as never missing and like hitting the corners. And so like umpires would buy into that. It's like, this guy hits the corners. So anything that was close, it's like, you've corner. Already got the story.
Corner.
And I don't think, I mean, is that bad? It's like he created that for himself.
I know. And I hated it because I hated the Braves. And so it was really tough. It basically felt like it was impossible to beat Maddux. But now that I'm removed from those times, I'm disturbed that a nibbler, Tom yeah. Glavine type, can't possibly have the same success, because they'd sort of earned their way into the umpire thinking, well, he's a hell of a pitcher. Like, go out and beat him. He's so artistic with his misses that they're strikes.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought that was so fascinating, how you can earn the umpire's benefit of the doubt.
It's happening in basketball a lot too, right? I mean, think about like LeBron James getting called for traveling, you know, or yeah, whatever. I mean, it's like, it just doesn't happen, right?
Right. Yeah. You reminded me, my dad had mentioned that Wilt Chamberlain had never fouled out of a game. And then he played 20 years or something. And he was a center, so he's involved with all the plays. And I remember asking him, how could that never happen when that happens all the time in the current game? And he said, oh, it wasn't how he played the game. There'd be times where he had 5 fouls and he absolutely clobbered a guy. But the ref didn't be the guy that threw him out for the first time. So he would get away with stuff. Now, it kind of sounds like bullshit, but doesn't that make it more interesting, especially if your team comes in and beats Wilt Chamberlain? Not only is probably bigger and better than everyone, but also gets the benefit of the calls. Talk about an upset.
We care about our community. Listen to your elders. What is the point of a game?
I think I got to the heart of it.
Is life fair?
We don't do it with joy, we do it out of necessity.
Let's just say that you couldn't afford it. And then that was it.